At sunset, all birds look black. Privyet. My name is Will, and this is Exploding Helicopter, the podcast that's looking to book its next holiday at a Russian survivalist camp. Now, on Christmas Day 1991, the hammer and sickle flag was lowered from above the Kremlin for the last time. Mikhail Gorbachev had resigned, and the Soviet Union was no more. Having thrown off the yoke of communism, the people of the newly independent state of Russia were free to embrace all those symbols of Western capitalist decadence that they'd been forbidden for so long. Big Macs, rock music, and of course, action movies. So the film we're reviewing on this show is Russia's first attempt at making an American-style action film. It's 1992's Red Mob. To help me look at the film, I'm joined by a man who's been training for this show by lifting a large rock repeatedly above his head. He always showers in cold water. It's Nick Rehak. Welcome back to the show, Tavarish.
Thank you so much for having me back, Will.
I've had you back for this particular episode for no other reason in that your surname begins with an R, so that when I'm kind of doing the titling and stuff for this episode, I can invert it to just add to the Russian flavor.
That's perfect. You could even throw a little accent over an A or a K or something like that, or even throw a Y, Rehaxvi or something at the end of it.
What I'd ideally like to do is like maybe make the center of the R sort of like a hammer and sickle design to kind of just to really reinforce that that kind of, you know, Cold War Russian Soviet Union vibe.
Absolutely, especially if the letters are in red and it's outlined in like a yellow or gold color.
Absolutely. I am always irritated by films that have some sort of Russian setting that don't embrace the inverted R in the title of their film. Because, I mean, it should just be some sort of guild standard that you have to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look at any other language out there that I'm aware of. Nobody else is inverting letters and spinning them around. So, like you said, embrace it. It's part of your culture. Be all about it.
Talking of Russia and Russian films, you know what I rarely watch, Nick? And that is Russian movies, because I was having a little look on my Letterboxd. I've kind of logged nearly 4,000 films, and only 16 of them are Russian. What's that all about?
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think because people have always painted Russia as the bad guys, especially, you know, the American superpowers. We've always kind of said, yeah, they're jerks. You got to think, Cold War lasted a long time. It was, what, 40s to late 80s, early 90s. And all of our movies, any video game, anything at all that takes place during the Cold War or is about any type of war, Russia's always the bad guy. Call of Duty, unless it's set in Vietnam or World War II, every villain is Russian. It's just inherently evil. Mm. So why explore that? I mean, if you go back to novelists, right? Dostoevsky, I butchered that. Tolstoy. But, you know what I mean? Like War and Peace, Crime and Punishment, Zhivago, like all these old books were written back in the 1800s. So everybody's looking at these old and sad, depressing books, and they're like, I don't want to watch any adaptation of that. like even me, for example, the little bit of Russian films I have all been Tarkovsky, Stalker and Solaris, all those heady, you know, you got to be somewhat intelligent to understand them type films. And that's really it.
And near suicidal. I mean, they're Tarkovsky's work is singularly uncheerful.
It is a slog, but an enjoyable slog at that. Like, it is really, it's something else. But
they have produced. But what is strange is that Russia does have some very famous directors, you know, like Tarkovsky, Sergei Einstein, and you know, I don't quite know how I have got so far in my life or in my sort of cinematic viewing life without watching more Russian movies, because I've watched films from, you know, all over Asia, from all manner of different European countries. But, you know, when I looked at the figures, Russia was just like right down there at the bottom. And, you know, maybe I've got some sort of deep seated, you know, anti-Rusky prejudice or something.
That, or you just don't want to be sad. I feel like a lot of
I do need joy in my life, Nick. That's for sure.
There you go. And I mean, I'm certainly not helping matters, but I feel like if you look at other types of cinema, you know, Asian cinema, Southeast Asian, even certain Bollywood type films, there is a style, there's a visual to them that is enticing and exciting. A lot of bright colors. This is a very muted film when it comes to color. Like, it is very just pale and overlong. But we'll get onto that when we get on the film. But it's just, I think it's just an appetizing thing. Russian films don't really look that appetizing, if that can be said about a film. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, have the Russians ever made a rom-com? That's my question to you, Nick.
I would watch it. If they had it, I would definitely watch it, because I want to see what Russian dating culture is all about. That would be fascinating to me. Like a Russian Sleepless in Seattle?
I can't even begin to imagine what that film would be like. But let's not deal with fictional films that perhaps don't exist. Let's talk about the one that does exist, the one that we have watched for this particular podcast. So let's get stuck into Red Mob and let's roll the trailer.
The Soviet Union exploded, and the Red Mob War began. This is the untold story. World champion pilots in death-cheating stunts never before seen in motion pictures.
There's your Nick arriving.
Let's go! 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 Out of there, hit the dirt. Move it, let's go! Come on!
17 real helicopters and 42 vehicles totally demolished in thrilling scenes of non-stop action.
Russia, 1992. The Soviet Union has fallen, and in its place there's an unholy alliance between the newly emergent Russian mafia and the KGB. Oleg, an Afghan war veteran, is running a survivalist summer camp when his son is taken hostage as a retribution for his friend's refusal to lead a drug and gun smuggling caravan over the border. With no other option to save his son, Oleg agrees to lead the caravan himself and is soon pitted against a wave of violence as he attempts to carry out his orders and live to see his son again. This film was directed by Vsevolod Plotkin. Hope I've got that reasonably right. In the role of Oleg, we have Vladimir Menshov, who, along with being an actor, was also a director. And his film Moscow Does Not Believe in Tears won the Oscar for Best Foreign Film in 1980, which...
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a bit like it's a bit like discovering that Sylvester Stallone is a highly regarded art house cinema director in Korea or something.
My goodness, I did not see that coming.
But Red Mob has a 5.9 rating on IMDb and a 3.1 out of 5 rating on Letterboxd. So with all of that out of the way, Nick, what did you make of Red Mob?
It was tough. It was a tough watch, and I think it's due to how I watched it. I found it on Amazon Prime, so I streamed it, and they didn't have it in its original Russian with like English subtitles. It was just an English dub, and the English dub was done very, very poorly because a lot of scenes just have no sound to them, no nothing. Even when there's gunfire and explosions, we don't hear anything, because it's muted so we can hear the American translation, which I feel like a lot of it was wrong. And a lot of what was being shouted or spoken just didn't match up. And it was very hard to kind of follow along and stick with it when you were so just far removed from the film because of how it was presented. So I had to watch it twice. And even then, I'm still a little confused about what happened. But as you explained the plot, I'm like, okay, that makes sense. Okay, I remember something like that happening. There are some really cool shots, and I kind of dig the music. But I don't know. It was a little long for me, a little long. And I feel like they could have tightened it up and I don't know. Just I felt like it was missing something.
Yeah, I think I have a pretty similar take to yourself. I mean, I think the version of the film I watched, I think was clearly a superior version, because I watched an American dub version, but I didn't have there was no sense of missing sound effects or anything like that. So while it was dubbed, I felt like I was definitely getting the full coherent dubbed version. But I have to say, I agree, even having watched a version of the film which had a proper soundtrack, had all the kind of full dub there, I found the plot of this film hard to follow. I mean, the broad outlines of it, like, are there that you can see. You know, Oleg is being forced to do something that he doesn't want to do in order to save his son. You know, there are some villains who are trying to ship guns across a border. But, you know, they're involved in these deals, these kind of like Russian mobsters, they're involved in these deals with these groups of, you know, I mean, because this film is set, well, it's not clear where this film is set, but I'm assuming it must be set in one of the kind of former Soviet republics where there is a strong Islamic presence. So somewhere like, you know, Uzbekistan or Kazakhstan or somewhere like that. And there, you know, so there are these deals that the KGB kind of crooked mafia people are doing with these Islamic criminals. But then they betray them, and it's not really clear why, and it's not really clear why they want the guns, or, you know, or why they're moving the guns from A to B, or these sorts of details are all, I couldn't follow them or understand what they were. So, you know, you're sort of left just with, you know, just with the kind of broad outlines of the plot. There are some bad guys forcing this Oleg guy, who's kind of our hero, to do something he doesn't want to do in order to save his son. And yeah, I found this a sort of confusing film. And, you know, given the length of this film, you know, you can kind of sometimes, you know, go for the ride with a film, like if it's delivering on sort of like lots of action. But this film, it does kind of spin its wheels on quite a few occasions. And yeah, given that you're sort of like got no idea what's going on in the plot, at those moments you do start to feel a bit sort of resentful towards what you're watching.
Absolutely. And it just feels muddy, right? Mm. Because even if we can kind of figure out, okay, here's the through line, here's what's happening, a lot of the characters, it's just, and it could be again the American dub, their reactions to things, their relationships with each other, nothing to me really spells like, this is important, I'm in danger, this is how I'm feeling. I mean, I feel like the son is the most emotive, but I think it's because he's going over the top. There's a lot, like, whenever he's sad, he is over the top sad, like, almost to the point where I'm like, all right, kid, like, let's rein it in a little bit. But everybody else, it's like, who cares? Everybody else just feels like they're there. And not really in the film. They're there in the picture, sure, but they're just not present within the character. Like, they're going through the motions almost. I don't know. Again, it's just something's missing, and it could be the disconnect with the dub or something, but I want that extra step, and it's not there for me.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, that sort of main plot, as you say, involving the sort of conspiracy between the criminals and the disillusioned elements of the security forces. Yeah, I completely agree. It's very muddy. It's very murky. It's not entirely clear what's going on there. And that does, I think, unfortunately, become a bit of a problem for this movie. We do also get a kind of a sort of significant B plot within this film. So, you know, and essentially this involves, you know, Oleg, who's this sort of grizzled army veteran who now runs this survivalist training camp. And, you know, at the beginning of the film, his son is, you know, coming back to, I don't know where, I don't even know where he's coming back from, whether he's come back from boarding school or I don't know, whatever. He's sort of coming back to sort of be reunited with his father. But it's very clear that there's a bit of a tension or disconnect between father and son, because Oleg clearly doesn't think that his son is a man enough, macho enough, or whatever. And one of the arcs within this film is their relationship, and their, you know, I'm not really spoiling anything here, because, you know, you everyone who's seen enough films knows that, you know, if they're setting that up in the opening scene, then obviously there's going to be some sort of change in the relationship later on the film, where they both come to regard each other differently. Anyway, Nick, what did you make of that aspect of the story?
I think there was moments when it worked and other moments when it didn't, because a lot of it felt very one-sided. When the son returns, and I agree, I think it was some kind of boarding school thing. When he returns, he's excited to see his father, and his father feels the same way. But as soon as they get to camp, all of a sudden it's, you're not my son, you're a soldier. And he very much just treats him like everybody else. There's no like special treatment. There's nothing. There's not even a moment where they're like sitting around the campfire and he's like, look, I'm hard on you because of this. Or there's no moment where they seem to get closer. And even later on in the film, you know, the son, it's not really a spoiler, it's, you know, part of the plot. The son gets kidnapped. And even when they are reunited, he still makes his son go marching away. Mm. Like, he's always kind of pushing his son away further and further. And sure, maybe he wants him to toughen up. Maybe he wants him to be more of a man. But at the same time, you'd think, like, there would be some type of embrace. There would be some type of welcoming and assuring, just something. But I never felt that, just that touch of like fatherly love or anything like that. It's always just been like, well, you're my son and this is what men do, so go do what men do. And it leaves me wanting more.
Yeah. I completely agree. I think they don't really know what they're doing with that particular plot, because right at the end of the film you have this moment of, you know, rapprochement between father and son. But it's a really weirdly scripted scene, in the fact that Oleg has a go at his son for, you know, showing up at a critical moment in order to try and help out his dad. And it's just a sort of, it's, you know, he really has a sort of go at him. And then Nick, who is sort of Oleg's right hand man, sort of, you know, actually, well, you know, maybe he was trying to help out. And then Oleg sort of, yeah, you're right, maybe he was. And it's just like, just a much simpler scene there would have just worked much better to cap off that particular storyline. But as I say, we just have this sort of peculiar scene where Oleg just lays into his son again, and then it all spins around on a sixpence for not very convincing reasons.
Yeah, and it just continues to add to all these other relationships, and it all unfolds like that. It's not like there's a handful of strong relationships and this just so happens to be written poorly or acted poorly. It's that way across the board. And it's unfortunate, because I want to understand these characters better. I want to understand their motivations. So when stuff starts happening, when you see the son, you know, upset and crying, when you see other characters kind of breaking down and trying to fight for their lives, I'm like, okay, maybe this isn't that serious because they don't look so serious. Maybe, you know, I just have no connection to these characters. So after a while, I'm just like, I kind of don't care what happens to you. And you don't want that, especially in an action film. You want to root for the hero. But sometimes I'm like, well, who's the hero really? Like, who should I be rooting for? I don't know what's going on here.
This is, Russia's first attempt at making a kind of an American style action movie. You know, neither of us have watched, a lot of Russian films. So, you know, how did you enjoy the Russian milieu in this film? The kind of, because it's all set within the country. The kind of plot lines are all very much, you know, specific to Russia and the disintegration of the state and the corruption that emerged in the aftermath of the breakup of the Soviet Union. So, yeah, how did you enjoy the Russianness of this movie?
I enjoyed it, but there's also parts of it I didn't understand. I didn't understand the Islamic part of it, because that threw me off. But you talking about how it could have been in a different part of Russia or a different territory altogether, I'm like, okay, that makes a little more sense. But I think the application of the different vehicles that they were driving, I didn't see a lot in the way of culture. You know what I mean? There was no particular, like, you know, here's a dinner celebration and we do it this way because, you know, sometimes in a film they'll have a particular culture or event that's happening, and they kind of explain to the character why it's going on. And it's not for the characters, for the audience to understand, right? There is nothing like that in this movie. So a lot of stuff you're like, okay, I guess that's commonplace. Okay, this is what they do here. Or it's hard to explain sometimes, because there's moments like he's got a makeshift chainsaw and that looks cool. Like, okay, well, why is it designed that way? Why this? It offers a lot of questions, but but it doesn't give those answers to American audiences. I'm sure in Russia they're like, oh yeah, that makes sense, or oh this or oh that, but a lot of it is just kind of left over. But again, I like that they're using all of their weaponry. Obviously they would. And I like that they're really focusing on some of these car chases, and they're not these fancy, you know, sports cars or tricked out Humvees or nothing like that. Like, they're just generic cars that people would be driving, and it really works, and it adds a level to what's going on, a level of believability in what's going on in the film.
Well, let's talk about the action that we get here within this this movie. Did it deliver for you on that particular front?
At times it did, but other times it didn't. And I think more often it didn't than it did. And I say that because we start to see a lot of the same stuff kind of repeated over and over. We see a lot of the same, like, car chase mentality. Everything that they're shooting, it always seems like they hit every single bad guy and the good guy never gets hit. Everything explodes for some reason. I mean, everything, even the building, literally one of the buildings explodes and the guy looks at it and is like, oh, fine. And he shoots a rocket into it anyway. And it's like, why does everything have to explode? But there's also a couple really good scenes when the guy is going through the, I guess, mosque or religious center, whatever you want to call it. And then it leads into a car chase with this massive truck. And then they're doing burnouts and spinouts in a marketplace. That's really cool. It's different. It's not something that we see a whole lot. It's filmed really well. But what I also kind of appreciated about it is it's sloppy. It's not this perfectly choreographed thing. They kind of bumble around, and it just – it works. It shouldn't. You should look at it and go, oh, that's dreadful. Mm. But it kind of works on a level of like, yeah, that's how it would really be. It adds weirdly this level of realism that you wouldn't expect from a movie like this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you thought, but I thought the opening action scene was actually, I mean, it was a bit of a damp squib, really, because there was a shocking lack of dynamism to that particular sequence. And you kind of think this is the opening to your film. Like, if you're going to make one bit of the film work, then you'd think it would be the opening set piece in order to grab the viewer's attention. But we just see these sort of gunmen go into a kind of Russian police station in order to steal some weapons, and there is a very ineptly staged shootout there. I mean, it's you know, people just point guns at each other, they fire, and some people fall over. I mean, there's no, they don't exploit the environment. There's no creation of tension. I mean, it's just flat as a pancake.
Yeah, it doesn't really hit, does it? It kind of is just there. Like, it just happens, and you're like, oh, okay, I guess so. It doesn't, like you said, it doesn't have that excitement, that dynamism is just not there. It was weird, though, because I'm watching it, and I'm like, man, this really feels reminiscent of something that I had seen recently, and that particular scene had so much more excitement to it than this, and I can't think of it. It was discussed about on the Exploding Forklift podcast. It was a movie in the very beginning of it. There was a big shootout during a dinner scene because everything is just getting shot up. Yes. And blown up, and codenamed Vengeance.
That's it.
So everything is getting shot up and blown up. And I'm like, all right, this is going to be intense. And it felt like it was maybe in a weird way copying that, but it didn't go all the way. No. Like, it just felt like it was coming short. And again, like, there's a guy within the first minute, he's like doing some kind of thing, looks directly into the camera, and then acknowledges, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. Let me continue the scene that I was doing. And it is... oh, God. It puts such a smile on my face, because then you know. You're like, oh, okay, this is what we're getting into.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to be looking at the exploding helicopter action.
Want to know what's happening for the weekend? Then check out Subject Cinema's 3-Minute Weekend, spotlighting all the new films hitting your local theaters. Join host T.C. Kirkham as he gives you the 411 on all the new blockbuster releases, as well as the indies that might be coming to your town, and choices for video on demand as well. 3-Minute Weekend, every Friday morning, from Subject Cinema and eCinemaOne.com, a member of the LAMB Podcasting Network, a PNR Networks podcast.
We're back, and now we're looking at the exploding helicopter action. And we've got two exploding helicopters to discuss. All this occurs during the film's extended climactic set piece. The villains are looking to make their getaway in a small number of helicopters. Nick, who's Oleg's right-hand man, drives a car at speed at one of the choppers that's about to take off. He leaps clear of the vehicle, which continues on through the rear loading door of the chopper, whereupon it crashes and blows up the helicopter. A little bit later, Nick and Oleg have commandeered a helicopter, and they take the opportunity to knock out another chopper that's on the ground by dropping a grenade on it. Nick, what did you make of the exploding helicopter action?
I thought it was fun and different. We don't really see a lot of helicopters exploding on the ground. Usually they're sky high and they're in the middle of a fight or something exciting. I know driving a car into a helicopter doesn't seem that exciting, especially when we saw it in Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard, whatever the fourth one was, where they launch it off of a toll booth into a helicopter. But it's a beautiful explosion. And get several angles of it, and it just gets right up the gut, right in there, and it just works. And then, of course, you know, just throwing a grenade at it, big, beautiful explosions. That's one thing this film succeeds at, is big explosions. Some of them for no reason, but just big and beautiful, and you can't ask. I don't think I've seen fire explosions this big in a long time in some of the films that we've been looking at. It was very exciting to see.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they are excellent explosions, that's for sure. And, you know, it looks clear to me that they are actually blowing up these helicopters. I mean, as you say, that first helicopter, I kind of just enjoyed the brutal simplicity of it. This helicopter, yeah, just this car just being rammed at speed into the guts of this helicopter. And then the whole thing explodes. And as you say, we get to enjoy it from multiple different angles. It's a truly huge fireball, as is the second helicopter after it's blown up by this grenade. The helicopters themselves are these Antonov-style, Russian helicopters, which are quite very distinctive type helicopters. If you do a little search for them online, you'll probably recognize them. Probably you will have seen them in other TV programs and films before, but they're quite cool looking helicopters. And we get to see them being blown up in really quite spectacular fashion in this film. I do have to take a little bit of issue with what we get to see in terms of exploding helicopter action within this film, because the reason why I spanked my own hard-earned money out on importing this Vinegar Syndrome edition of Red Mob was because the marketing of this film said that 17 helicopters were destroyed in the making of this film. So, I was thinking, wow, that would make it the record breaking, that would make it the film with the most exploding helicopters in cinema history if we see that many helicopters explode in it. But sadly, we don't see anywhere near that number. Now, it might be that, I'm not saying that they're lying, that may be that 17 helicopters were destroyed in the making of this film, because the helicopters that we do get to see in this film, they do look like they're fairly knackered. They do look like they're at the end of their serviceable life. I mean, they really do look rickety. I mean, the helicopter that Oleg commandeers, I mean, he just kicks the door off it and it just falls to the ground.
They do look rather beat up, as if they'd been there for some time. Even the paint jobs on some of them, I'm like, we could have spruced this up just a quick, once over with the paint gun. But yeah, a lot of them do look beat up, and it would make sense that 17 were destroyed, during production. But you wonder, how was it, for some of the final scenes? Was it, maybe there was a helicopter used as a camera and that went down? Like, where does it come in? Because you don't really see – we get two big explosions, so they're not going to kind of run that over again. I feel like that's a one and done. Let's make sure we got the shot. But 17, that's a little disappointing that it doesn't happen.
Well, I mean, in some ways, I want to see it. Mm-hmm. I want to see – right here now podcasting with you about it, I wouldn't want to be – okay, now we need to talk about the 13th exploding helicopter in the film. What did you make of that, Nick? I'm glad we're not having to go through them each one, in painstaking detail. But you know, we have criticized the action in this film a little bit. There are some very good moments within it, but I have to say the aerial helicopter action that we get at the end of this film, I really enjoyed that. And for me, that was the action highlights of this entire movie was the extended aerial duel between these beaten to hell helicopters.
Especially because it's not like the pilot is driving through and there's a guy on a built-in machine gun, or there's already guns built into the chopper. There's literally people hanging out of the door, shooting at each other, like kind of squaring off like two boxers would square off. It's not like there's one chasing the other behind and, you know, leapfrogging each other and firing these shots. Like they are really just like aim for him, like spin me around. I want to get a good shot at it. And it does add a level of excitement, and it does add a much needed level of tension that we don't really get anywhere else in the film.
Well, I think it's probably time for us to say Dos Vidania and wrap this show up. Nick, do you want to take a moment to plug anything you've got going on at the moment?
Yeah, the only thing I've really got going on consistently over on Mixcloud.com, I have a small radio program. It's an hour long. It's just me and music and some fun facts about the music, stories about the music. So far, as of this recording, I've had over 10 episodes. We've listened to over 130 individually different songs. I've yet to repeat an artist, which I'm very proud of. A lot of programs, you'll start to hear the same stuff over and over. It's all new every week, different genres. It's just a lot of fun. Every Tuesday, an episode is out. So when you get a chance, give it a listen.
Yeah, go and check it out. As always, and here's something else you can check out. Check out the Exploding Helicopter website at explodinghelicopter.com. If you can rate, review, or retweet us, we'd be very grateful. We'll be back soon. But until then, keep watching the skies for those exploding helicopters.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
Papa! The water's ice cold!
Impossible! Try it again.
There's no hot water. There isn't even a faucet for it.
Check in with me.